Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And today, I want my guest to introduce himself for the pure reason I don't want to do him any injustice. Hello.
Hi, yeah, my name's Ed Dawson. I've been in SEO for heading towards 20 years now. Originally, I was a developer, so my background is technical. But my main focus for the past 20 years or so has really been more about content marketing and SEO. I started off in SEO with a website called broadband.co.uk, which we ran very successfully until 2021, when we sold it in a trade sale to one of our competitors. They approached us mid-pandemic and made us an offer, and it was a good offer, so we took it. Well, that's not the only thing I've done for the last 20 years. I've run other affiliate sites, and I still have other affiliate sites. And more recently, I've launched a keyword research tool called Keywords People Use.
Okay. Would you say your background as developing, has it made a big impact into the growth of the businesses you've run?
Well, having a development background and going back to, say if you about 20 years, like WordPress, I think, was just probably in its infancy in the early 2000s. At that time, we literally just created everything from scratch because we could. So we developed our own CMSs, we developed every solution we needed because we had the ability to do it. And a lot of things you actually had to do back then. It wasn't a whole range of tools and platforms that there are now. It was literally, there was very few things, and it was a lot more, you needed more technical knowledge back then. So it definitely helped back then. And I think more now, it means that we never hit a roadblock where we can't do something. Well, there's always a way to do something. So if you've got some technical skills, it means you can do things that might be more difficult if you're just relying on sort of off-the-shelf tools. But the sort of, on the converse side of it is, you have to make sure that you don't over-engineer stuff, because you can end up spending a lot of time creating something when there's an off-the-shelf solution you could plug in half a day, and you might go and end up making something. So you have to find the right balance. Otherwise, you're not going to make the best of it both ways.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. I speak to so many people that realistically never launch anything because they want to launch it perfect. You have to test the market. So with the broadband.co.uk site, So was it you that grew it from scratch?
It started off, there was a small team. The original story was, I was working at a web agency, and that web agency was called Broadband Communications, and they named that business back in about 1994. So I wasn't there involved at the start of that web agency, but I came in and started working there. And through a combination of buyouts and people getting involved and different things, I ended up with part ownership with my wife. And around about the same time, what happened was broadband became a technical thing, became a product, broadband internet. So people were ringing up saying, oh, can we get some broadband off you? And we go, no, we're a web agency. So we rebranded the web agency, and then we're like, right, well, let's do something with this broadband domain that we've got, sort of accidentally. And it was my wife's idea. She said, why don't we make a comparison site? It's one of the very first comparison sites. So it was a very new concept back that long ago to have a comparison site of any sort. And we were just like, right, well, let's work out how to do this and then work out how to monetize it. So we didn't exactly set up with a big master plan of what we were going to do. It was a case of, like, what can we make with this opportunity? And to start with, I mean, it started off with too many cooks. So and different people wanted to do different things. And in the end, me and my wife said, right, we'll buy out our partners on this and we'll take it forward just by ourselves. Because it was not that everyone's ideas were bad. There was lots of good ideas, but there's obviously you've got a finite set of resources and different competing ideas. Being in business, it doesn't always work. So it was a case of we took it with agreement with everybody else. We paid a fair price for it to take it that way, and then sort of built it up from there and concentrated on solely on that. And you know, we sold the web agency a couple of years later, and then concentrated solely on the affiliate side of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, this resonates so much because years and years ago when I started in the industry, I just set a load of sites up myself and took them. And one of them was a flat pack builder website. And suddenly I had inquiries coming through. And I'm like, I'm not going to Sussex to build your wardrobe this weekend. You know, and it just, you know, opportunities just happen down the road when you're least expecting it. And do you think if that particular incident hadn't happened, would have you gone down the affiliate marketing route yourself?
That's a very good question. I would have to say I don't know. Possibly not. I mean, we'd got familiar with the affiliate marketing side because I was working as a web agency. We were working with some big brands who had affiliates of their own. So we were used to working with affiliates. So we'd be over there working on the merchant sites and they'd have affiliates. So we had to make sure everything worked with that. So we were becoming aware of this monetization model. And I mean, I would have liked to think I'd have put two and two together and gone, well, I can build sites and I can know how to monetize on the side and then we'll do it. But I mean, who knows? It's one of those great ifs. It's probably 50-50, and I'm probably being generous to myself there.
Right. So when you had this thing and you knew that, well, people wanted this service, people wanted this product, and you set about creating this marketplace, what was your first steps on, well, how can we push it forward?
Well, we had to solve a few problems. First of all, there was the content problem. So we had to write and at that point, there was very little information about broadband. So we had to become one of the original sources for it. Then there were some technical problems, like we wanted to be able to do a postcode checker so that it wasn't just a site about broadband. You could go there and say, this is where I live. Can I get broadband? Because in the first instance, when broadband was first rolling out, it wasn't available everywhere. So be able to answer that question was quite a key one in terms of, obviously, you can monetize it better if you can tell people what's available in their area. And then there was the piece around, obviously, how we monetize it and how we get the information from the broadband providers. And naively, to start with, we thought, oh, they'll just come to us and they'll fill in a forms for us. And we built a whole CMS for the broadband providers to be able to log into and put in all the details of the deals and stuff. And then we approached them and they were all like, no, we don't do that. we have our own, sort that out yourself. So that was like, right. So we've now got to manage, keeping all that deal information up to date and keeping that database up to date. So there was those challenges where I think probably going in naively means that we didn't have to overthink it. So we just got on with it. If we'd really thought about it and all the complexities and everything that we had to solve as we were going along, it's one of the things where you might not start. So I'm bigger believer in just getting going on things rather than overthinking it too much up front, because if you overthink it too much, you'll talk yourself out of doing things.
Yeah, just solving problems as they arise.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I think that's the way forward. And what learnings in those early days did you come across or did you solve or that really sparked your attention and thought around something?
Well, I think obviously the things we learned were you've got to gather the data yourself. If you want to be an affiliate, don't rely on the merchants. They'll give you a certain amount if it's like feed data or endless emails, but the thing is then there's no consistency between how they communicate with you. So you really have to build your own processes. If you're going to build a database, if you're going to be an affiliate building a database, and that's what I would strongly suggest for anyone who's looking into affiliate marketing, you need to be more than just content. You've got to have like a tool based around it too. That really, really helps. And with us, it was the postcode checker. And then we did things like the broadband speed test. And it was like that, trying to build tools, because tools are what will bring people back. Tools are what's really good at getting people to take certain actions. You can walk them through a process rather than just bombarding them with a load of text. So it's more about making your site into something that's useful in a way that people start to link to it. I always find that things like tools tend to get links. If you've got a database which isn't available elsewhere, you will get linked to naturally. So it's that, it's building that kind of content that is unique, is good, is valuable, and is the kind of resource that people link to.
Yeah, I think from my own experience in over the years, the sites I've worked on, you know, having some sort of tool on the page obviously mm-hmm. helps with user experience. It helps with conversions. Mm-hmm. It helps mm-hmm. with interaction. It's just that connectivity. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. do you think a lot of affiliate marketers these days are just missing out on points or missing out on things because they just think, let's just throw a load of content out and slap affiliate links in them?
Yeah, well, there's not that doesn't work, because some people are very successful doing that. But I think it's more about, if you're trying to max with us, I think there's one way to look at it is, obviously you can just try and get more and more traffic and throw it at any old content. So you can scale by scaling your traffic, or you can scale by trying to convert the traffic you're receiving better. And if you can do both, if you can scale your traffic and scale your and improve your conversion, then you win both ways. But it's often easier to work on improving your conversion rate, so you can monetize the traffic you do get better. So then you can double your business without having to double your traffic, just by doubling your conversion rate. And especially with affiliate conversion rates, which tend to be much lower than, say, e-commerce conversion rates. So you're talking single digits and sometimes less than 1%, you know, depending on the type of traffic you're getting. So that's the kind of thing that I think that probably doesn't get talked about enough in the affiliate world is converting traffic into clicks and into sales.
Well, that's what generates the money.
Yeah.
You know, without the click, it's pointless.
Yeah.
You know, but your own personal experience growing the broadband.co.uk site, mm-hmm. is what was the moment that pinged, thinking, oh, we've got something big here?
I think that was probably when, in the first instance, we were using PPC, and that was back in the days of, you know, very early AdWords, and it wasn't that successful. Lots of money was being spent on PPC, but not a lot was being made. And it's when we looked at it and thought, hang on, if we turned off the PPC and just relied on the SEO, our traffic could go down, but our sales wouldn't drop that much, and our outgoings would drop hugely. And it's a case of, rather than throwing away, I think at one point we were doing £20,000-£30,000 a month on PPC, about £1,000 a day, and, you know, sales would be around about £1,000 a day. And it's when we worked out that we put some tracking on that, we could track the sales from PPC to SEO. And it's like, well, if we cut the PPC, we might lose 20% of sales, but our costs are reduced by 1,000. You know, our costs will go to almost zero a day, and we'll be, our sales will be like 800 plus a day. And it was at that point where it's like, actually, this is where we need to change our strategy from trying to do SEO and PPC and just go for the SEO, because we appear to be better at that, you know. The PPC margin was getting, it had worked for a while, you know, when we first started, because the merchants themselves, the broadband suppliers themselves, weren't doing PPC. But as soon as they started doing PPC, it pushed the cost up hugely, because they've got a lifetime value far higher than an affiliate does. Our lifetime value was the sale, if we got the sale, and that was it. Whereas obviously a broadband supplier is looking at many years of income off that person. So it just killed PPC for us. But it was that point where we saw that there, that switched everything, basically.
Yeah. Do you think it was important to have a business mindset moving forward? Because obviously you analysed the profit, not mm-hmm. necessarily the revenue, you mm-hmm. know, and the cost and everything. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's so important in the affiliate world to literally think like a business owner rather than mm-hmm. a website owner?
Yeah, well, you have to. I mean, you are a business. I mean, it's not that you should think like that. You have to think like that because you are running a business, and you've got to look at it in cold, hard data terms like that. You know, what's your revenue per visitor? What's your EPC? You know, all these things, you have to make those decisions and look to maximize them all the way through. So yeah, I mean, you definitely have to have a commercial mindset on. But you have to balance that with the content that you put out, because you've obviously got to provide the content that is good for users, especially on a consumer-focused stuff. So if you're an affiliate, you're essentially selling to consumers most of the time. There are some B2B affiliates, but it's very rare. But, you know, you're dealing with consumers who are hopefully going to get them to transact with a business. So you've got to have that sort of consumer side in your head at the same time, because the best affiliates, I mean, the very best affiliate in the UK, for example, at the moment is, and for a long time, is Martin Lewis, Money Saving Expert, right? He is just, you know, he's run affiliate sites all the way. He is the Don of affiliates. But, you know, most people just think of him as like a consumer champion. And he is sort of 95% of the time. But with that 5% on top that monetizes that audience he's built incredibly well via affiliate sales. You know, he sold out just under 100 million to Money Supermarket, but he's still involved in running the site. So he's still obviously on the payroll. And, you know, and he's got his TV shows and all that, all based on being a consumer champion. So you've got to have that content piece, but think very strategically on the business side as well.
Do you think that's because he's using his audience to build the content in one respect?
Well, if you go back to sort of 20 years to where he first started off, I mean, he was a journalist. I mean, he was trained as a journalist and, you know, and got into consumer finance as a consumer finance journalist. But the difference is there's lots of other consumer finance journalists, but not many of them are multimillionaires. What he did was, you know, sort of take that audience he was building and that ability to build an audience, that journalistic side of him, knowing how to speak to an audience, how to shape a story around very boring products. Like I say, consumer finance is boring, essentially, but he makes it interesting for people and he gets people excited about it and builds stories around it. And that's what you've got to do, really. With anything you're trying to sell, you've got to build a story around it and build a narrative that gets people to engage with it. And like, he's just brilliant at it. I mean, I try, but I wouldn't say I've got anything as close as him. But, you know, obviously, because we competed against him with broadband.co.uk, he sells broadband, he does a lot of content on broadband. We used to know on broadband.co.uk if his TV show had been on, because our traffic would spike. Because if he'd been talking about broadband on his TV show, then all the broadband sites would get a boost in traffic because people are searching different, you know, things around broadband. And other sites I've got which touch on similar things that he works with, I still see those spikes when he's talking about certain products. Yeah, you can see at that 8 p.m. on Monday night, the traffic goes up, and that's him driving that. It's amazing.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned you have a few affiliate sites.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you say the commonalities of positive impact are across the board?
What's the commonality? Well, as I say, the first thing is to make sure they're useful. Second thing I've always gone for is to try and go for things that are mass market rather than very niche stuff. And I know that's not necessarily the advice people always get when they're starting out, but I suppose when you've been doing it as long as we've been doing it, we're fortunate in the fact we've got more resources than average, basically, to start out something. So it's given us that in to be able to break into areas which are harder to get into. So with the broadband, we were lucky. With the domain name, we were lucky that it was an immature market at the time. So that was just fluke. Can't claim any kind of, you know, business brains or cleverness for the opportunity was just pure luck. But then obviously since then you make your own luck after a certain period of time. So that's when we've gone on to other sites. So we've stayed in telecoms, we've done lots of stuff with mobile phones, we've done lots of stuff with electricity. We've tried to do stuff that is, you know, other utilities, the stuff that everybody needs and wants to purchase, basically, because it gives you a large market to go at. But it is harder and it does take longer to for sites, especially starting from scratch, to pick up. And the reason I went into doing other sites was because having one site with the broadband story was, you know, you can put a lot down to luck. It was a case of, can I do it again? You know, and it was also because we got hit by Penguin and Panda really badly, you know, in 2011, 2012 time. We got hit so badly by them, which we recovered it. But yeah, I was very nervous and thinking, I don't want all my eggs in one basket again. And so it's a case of, can I actually do it again in other areas? So that's why we then went on to launch other sites and try and get into those areas. And which we did, and we managed to do. Some work better than others. But that's what got us into the position to then later to be able to say, well, actually, we'll sell Raw Why Not Co. UK. Because you can't keep everything forever. And there always comes a time to cash out with everything. I mean, everything's got its price at the end of the day. And it was a case of, if we hadn't done that diversification sort of in the mid, sort of 2014, 15 time, starting doing that, we wouldn't have been in a position to sell Raw Why Not Co. UK in 2021 and take some chips off the table, essentially.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting hearing you saying, well, we're just going to go for the biggest markets possible, the most competitive markets out there, when the affiliate world are just hyper focusing on a certain area of a certain area of a certain area, you know. But obviously, the growth aspect, you know, obviously you're talking about, well, the growth is phenomenal because the market's phenomenal. And I think with people who niche down, it's only a small market.
Yeah, but the difference, it's not a bad idea to niche down. I mean, it depends. Like I say, if I caveated it to start with, saying I was lucky of having a broader time horizon. Yeah. So the broader your time horizon, and the longer you're willing to go at it before trying to monetize it, trying to make money, trying to see traction, then the more competitive the thing you can go for. So, for example, I've got a site that promotes electricity. That took 2 years to get traction. And it was one of the cases, it was almost a case of, is it worth keeping it going? But, you know, I've realized now that I never turn a site off, right? I always keep them going because you never know how long it's going to take for them to tick up. And it took 2 years for that to tick up, and then it started to tick up, and then it started to make some income, right? And it makes good income. You know, it makes maybe a couple of £1,000 a month. And it's one of our smaller sites, but it's the case that's a nice little income now. But it took a long time to get there. So if I was trying to start from scratch with no runway and I wanted to get results in an area as quickly as possible, then yeah, niche down, go much lower, because that way you will start to get some traction. But it's only because I had the luxury of saying I can wait 2 years for a site to do something, or I can write it off completely. You know, if I'd have to write off an investment on a site like that, that's fine. It doesn't matter. That's like a rounding error. But that's because I'm in a fortunate situation and have that much broader time horizon. So yeah, I mean, it's a case of, the faster you want results on something, niche down further. If you're willing to wait and have a longer time horizon, then you can go broader.
Yeah, I think I spoke to somebody and they mentioned that you realistically need at least 10K to launch a site in the affiliate world.
I don't know. I mean, it depends. Depends on what skills you've got, and it depends how much time you've got and how much you're going to do yourself. If you're going to write all your own content, if you're going to, you know, do all your own design work, if you're going to do everything yourself and you've got the time to do it, you can do it for far less. And especially if you're going into something really niche and you just only use as Amazon affiliates and you're going down that kind of route, I don't think you need to spend that much money. And I wouldn't say to people, don't start unless you've got that much money. I'd look at it in terms of taking small bets. And there's a guy called Daniel Basilo or something like that who created this small bets movement, which is by basically saying you haven't, again, it's not thinking about the long term. It's trying to start something small, quick, now. Don't be perfect. Just get on with it. See where it goes. Say, I'm going to spend a month on this and then launch it, or 2 weeks and then launch it and see what happens. I'd encourage anyone to get going and get started and try, you know, because if you don't do anything, you're not going to get anything. Okay. So if you do something, if you don't get anything, you're no worse off than if you've done nothing. You might spend some time, you might spend a little bit of money, but, you know, it's not the end of the world. But if you don't start, you're never going to get anywhere. And the more things you start, and the more times you're willing to start again and again, the more likely eventually something will pick up for you.
Right. Have Have you seen any positive or negative impact on your own sites during the past few months of the bombardment of all the updates?
We've had no catastrophic off a cliff 90% loss type sites. We've had some that had a bit of a gradual one. We've got some sites. There's one I spoke about on my podcast. It's in the telecoms niche in Canada, and it was only monetized with AdSense. Because what I tend to do when we launch sites is we launch with no monetization, and then when they've got a bit of traction, then we tend to put something like AdSense on just to sort of bring a little bit of money in. And then when they get to a certain point, that's when we'll start looking for affiliate partners. And this one in Canada, we got to the point where we'd launched it, we'd left it for about a year or so, and the traffic was ticking nicely enough. It's like, right, we'll put AdSense on, and that was bringing in some money. And then it wasn't the helpful content, or was it the helpful content? It was around about October time. I can't remember because there were so many different updates going on. I can't remember which one it was. But I did see from that it started to tick down. And that did lose maybe 40% of traffic over about a month. But the weird thing was, it was based on exactly the same template as other sites in other countries, which didn't see the drop. We had the exact same site targeting India. So it was on a different domain, but with the same templates. It was a bespoke written site. It wasn't WordPress or anything, but the one we'd written bespoke. And the one that was targeting India. And the India one, at the same time, went up 100%. The graph just went straight up like that. And it's like, well, these are both exactly the same, but the only difference is the India one, we hadn't put AdSense on. So that was still unmonetized, and it went up, and the Canada one, which we had AdSense on, went down. So since then, I was like, right, well, let's take AdSense off and see what happens. And it's sort of baseline stopped that 40% drop. It hasn't gone down any further, but it hasn't gone back up again yet. So I'm just waiting for whichever algorithm that was run that decided that and then flip it up the way. So we'll see. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have seen some effects. Again, yes, some we've had positive, some we've had slight negatives, but nothing catastrophic.
Right. So what's your standpoint on the whole content creation thing? Now we're living in an AI world, with your affiliate sites.
Mm-hmm. AI, yeah. Well, this it's a really tough one, because I mean, you see lots of people saying, we're using AI to do this, AI to do that, content wise, and publishing all this stuff, and then they're seeing it, they're posting graphs of things going up crazy, and then obviously you're seeing them getting hit and coming down crazy, and it's all, and Google saying, oh, it's fine, as long as it's still written for people. I've not actually published any AI written content to any of our websites. Now, that's not to say AI can't be used. We do use AI within keywords people use to do analysis of keywords and to do clustering of keywords, and to do content briefs. So I found AI is really good for content brief, for doing research, that kind of thing. But I've experimented with trying to get it to create copy, decent copy, but there's nothing that I've actually read that it's done that I would be happy to publish, and that isn't so spottable. I mean, the only thing I've used AI for is on publishing the podcast, where it does the show notes. And I let BuzzStream have a go at it. And I often edit it a little bit. Sometimes I leave it pretty much as is. But I reckon you must be using the same AI on BuzzStream, because your show notes look very similar to my show notes. So
no, I don't use the built-in one. I've never dabbled with that yet, because they recently launched it. I don't use that one. I do use an AI, because I used to pay someone to manually create them.
The
quality might have been better, but obviously, I don't make any money from this. I've no sponsors or anything, so it's a case of, well, you have to decide whether or not
Yeah, and I find on that on the show notes, it's great because it quite often will pick out the theme, the topic, and you know you get that kind of that synopsis put on the show notes for you, which is probably useful somewhere. I mean, I'm still new to podcasts really and how the podcast search works, but I was thinking it can't be bad for it to be there. But sometimes I read the ones that it produces to me and I just cringe slightly at some of the words, some of the phrases it uses. And I've experimented with, like, you know, deleting it and having no show notes sometimes, or sometimes writing my own, and sometimes using the AI ones and seeing it, what effect it seems to have on the number of people downloading the podcast. At the moment, I can't see which difference either way. So yeah, but that's the reason why I've not been willing to put anything live yet on consumer facing sites, because I just don't think it's good enough yet. That's not to say it won't be at some point in the future, but I'm still not quite there. But it's the kind of thing where I say everyone experiment, and it's especially good for doing research and getting ideas and writing content briefs. And you know, if you it gets over that blank page problem where you know you don't know what to write, or you don't know how to sort of structure a document or structure a guide, it's a good starting point. But I would always use it as a skeleton rather than as a whole piece.
Yeah. So moving away from the affiliate side for a bit, mm-hmm. What made you want to launch an SEO tool?
Well, that was because obviously we sold blogman.co.uk, and you know, it's a case of I'm old. I'm in my 40s, but I'm not old enough that I want to stop.
Well, I'm ancient then.
But. And it was a case of taking a process that we'd use. So essentially, I'm still creating sites and we're still doing stuff. And it was taking that process. I've never been one to look at keyword volume, keyword density, you know, keyword searching on keyword tools and chasing keywords. I've always taken it back to sort of more first principles, which is when someone's going to a search engine, they're trying to get a question answered. Right. So if you base your content and your site around answering people's questions, that's what Broadband at KDX is all about. It was about answering people's questions about broadband. So you've got to write content to answer people's questions. So therefore, you've got to work out what people's questions are. And back in the day when we first started, we had to sort of work it out ourselves. And then gradually more and more sources online became available for finding those questions. And it's just became apparent that the more that we could automate that process, the more quickly we could produce content, more content we got on the site, and good content that matched the intent of people searching and helped cover a site in its entirety to get that topical authority. I'm really big on topical authority. I'm really big on getting your site architecture right. And within that, it's all going to be based around the questions around the topic. So it was then a case of we're building this anyway. Let's build a tool, because there were tools that were doing bits of it and parts of it, and individual tools doing various bits, but there's nothing that was bringing it together. And there's nothing that the bit we're working on now in terms of taking, you've got your questions, now take it into building your topical cluster so you can build your topical authority to sort of build into the complete process. So yeah, it was just a case of, well, I've never had a software as a service, but I could see a demand for it. I could see more and more people asking me about questions like, how do you do this? How do we build a site like that? How do we build topical authority? What was your process when you built broadband.co.uk? What was the process in your other sites? It's like, right, well, there's an opportunity here to build something to help more people than just me. So I can only scale so far. I can only, you know, build so many sites. So it helps other people build more sites. So it helps, yeah, just helps people get their process right and build better content, which builds a better internet at the end of the day.
Did you have a wobble? I'll call it a wobble. When Google stated, you know, the whole FAQ snippet, they're not going to show anymore. Did that impact, obviously, your mentality of, well, we'll just answer questions?
No, I mean, because I've never chased FAQ snippets or anything like that. I don't look at it in terms of that. And it's not about answering the question is not about chasing that search term, that question. So say the question is, I don't know, what's the best kind of broadband for a household full of students, you know, or a student house? That it's not about answering that exact question. It's then finding all the related questions around that question or that topic. So we're talking about student broadband. So it's then finding all of the questions that might pertain to a student and broadband. And then you could gather all these questions together, and then you say, right, I'm going to write some content that answers those questions. Maybe not directly, maybe not like question, answer, not FAQ. It might be a whole article, or it might be a tool, developing a tool to answer that question. So it's making sure you answer the question, but it's not about just literally answering questions one after the other, because that's boring content as well. There is a time and a place for an FAQ within most content, but you've still got to have body content, you've still got to have all the other content that produces around it. So it's not about chasing FAQ snippets. It's basically about covering a topic in enough depth that you will pick up all the keywords without even thinking about what those keywords are. So it's rather than having a long laundry list of keywords and saying, right, I've got to hit all these keywords in this article and writing an article to hit the keywords. It's now I've got to answer all these questions in my article so that someone can read this article and then be able to look at this list of questions, they'll be able to answer them all. So it's not necessary, it's not a one-to-one relationship. You know, it's a case of helping you create essentially the best article on that topic. And you do that by answering the questions. So you've got to find the questions so you know what then to cover.
Yeah, I'm just smiling away here because that's been my mentality for 20 years ago till now, just, you know, looking at, if you understand what the audience wants mm-hmm. and just basically giving them the very best answers, then that article is going to rank for lots of related things.
Yeah, hugely. So it's just going back to that first principle of what the person on the other side of the other computer looking at your website who's searching to answer a question, you want to be the answer to that so that Google will hook you up in the middle. And it's not about keyword volume. It's not about keyword popularity. It's not about keyword difficulty. It's about answering questions.
Yeah, loving it. Really am. You know, it's so along my own personal mindset when it comes to thing. Yeah, I mean, I've had a big bugbear about keyword volumes for a long time because I think it deters opportunities in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, we get the same thing. It's a common question that people ask us about keywords people use. They'll say, oh, why don't you have keyword volume data for the questions? And we're like, well, if we did put that on, most of them would say, like, nothing, because all the keyword volume tools, they're not getting the data direct from Google. You know, they're getting aggregated sets of data from different suppliers. Lots of the times it guesses. If it's any kind of new trending topic, there is no volume data, even if anyone had accurate volume data. And that's not the point of the process that we're trying to encourage people to follow when it comes to creating the content. I don't use any of the like traditional SEO tools like Hrefs and all that for looking at keywords or volumes or that. I've just never bothered with that for years and years and years because it never got me anywhere by worrying about them. Best way was to produce content. I know I'm repeating myself, but to produce content that answers the questions real people have. And that is what will draw the traffic over the long term, you know. And you start aiming at the longer tail keyword things. Don't worry about the narrow head at the top. Just go for the long tail and you will start over time to pick up shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And then you'll start, you know, ranking over time for those really high volume keywords. But, you know, in my experience, the high volume keywords are great for traffic volume, but they don't always necessarily translate into sales brilliantly. You know, it's not back in the day when we did have access to keywords from Google. So we knew what Google mm-hmm. was searching on. We're probably going back now to 2009, those 2000s. We were tracking, you know, what are the keywords actually drive sales. And, you know, for the amount, terms like broadband, which is great for loads of traffic. And we did, I mean, I think the site still ranks in the top 10 for the term broadband. I mean, we ranked number one for many, many years. And we've got tons of traffic for it, but it was awful for conversion. Those people were not people who had the buying intent. The people who had the buying intent were the ones who were putting in much more detailed questions. You know, they got a much more specific question. And if you can answer that, you're getting them towards the sale. Whereas someone's just doing a starting off broadband, they're so top of funnel that, you know, it's not actually the most valuable keyword to chase.
Yes. Now, over the years, what's been your thought process or structure or technique when it comes to links?
Okay. Well, going back before Penguin and Panda, we used to buy links. We used to get comment links, forum links, blog link, you know, buying links in articles, PBN links, all the stuff which wasn't against the terms of service, or as it became against the terms of service, Google was rubbish at actually working it out. Everyone was doing it. You know, that's just what happened. Then come 2012, I always remember, forget which year it was, Penguin came along, wallop. And we went from ranking number one for the term broadband to ranking, I think it was 989, just like the very last page. You went all the way down. And we lost 98% of our Google traffic overnight, which worked out to be about 80%, so 75% of our traffic overall just went like that. And that was like our income gone, you know. And we've got payroll, you know, we've got mortgages, you know, all the things that, well, it's like, the business is gone. And it was like, okay, what do we do? So luckily, a guy called Cole Hendy, and you might have heard of Cole Hendy, he would just started working freelance. He'd been at AEMA before that, and he started working freelance. And I'd met him a few times at SEO meetups and stuff. And he just gave me a call and said, so you've got a problem. And I was like, you've got a problem. He said, I think you might be able to help. And I was like, right, yeah, let's do it. Let's work it out. Let's sort this out. And he helped loads with, because we'd also had Panda issues at the same time that we're sort of starting to take because the content wasn't good enough back then. So Panda issues. And then we've got Penguin, which wiped us out. So we went through the whole disavow process. We went through the whole, you know, getting links and main links removed as possible, spent months on it, and then got the penalty lifted, basically. So after two or three attempts to put the disavow in, and we came back up. And that's brilliant, right? And at that point, I was like, I am never, ever, ever buying a link ever again, because it's just not worth it. It's just not worth it. You know, especially not to anything I care about. Right. If you care about a site and you're in it for the long term, buying links, you know, that, you know, and these people nowadays, if you didn't go through Penguin, get slapped like that, you know, you don't know how bad it was. So, yeah. So we then said, right. And this is again where we pivoted more to the content side, you know. So when, and obviously that Panda was part of that, fixing issues that Panda had caused, and fixing that was like, right, we need to change how the site works, change the architecture, change a whole approach to content. So that's where our link building went 100% organic and 100% natural. And like I said, when we sold Broadband UK, it was part of a legal pack this big. One of the things I had to warranty was that we didn't, you know, that we didn't buy links. And we, you know, I told the buyers all about the problems we'd had at Penguin. They'd had similar problems like there's lots of other sites had back then. So I said, yeah, that's where we were then. But since then, we switched and we're like, you know, no more link buying. So I've legally warranted that on that site. And yeah, and it's again with all the other sites that I've built since that are important to me. Definitely no link building. And I know some people will go, oh, no, it's nonsense. You know, it's make good content, build good content. It will, if you've really made good content and really made a good site, people will link to it. They will attract natural links. If you make a rubbish site with rubbish content, with no effort, no skill, and something that's not worthwhile, people won't link to it. And okay, you can shortcut it. People do rate mediocre sites and spam loads of links at it. And yeah, and it can work. Links, bought links can raise you up. But you've always got that sword of Damocles at the top of your head. At some point, those links will stop working. And if you're lucky, they'll just stop working and you'll just drift down. If you're unlucky, you'll get caught in a penalty and you will plummet. So if you want to be able to sleep well at night, it's better not to buy links. But if people want to buy links, that's up to them. I'm not I'm not going to sit here and say people are selling links or following that process, you know, that are bad people. They're not. You know, I know loads of people that buy links and they're really decent people. But it's all about, you know, as long as you understand what you're doing and understand the risks, then each to their own, you know. But for me, it was a case of that penguin was so bad. And and it could have been, and it was existential for other sites. I saw some competitors get hit by it and they never came back. They never recovered it. And that was it. That was business gone. But the great thing for us was, after stopping buying links and then concentrating on the content, our traffic went up fundamentally at the end of it by about 5 to 6 times higher. So a 600% increase in traffic over the next sort of 3 years by concentrating on content and not on just trying to obtain links at any cost. And not worrying about the content and trying to make it up with links. So as soon as we started concentrating on better content, and we attracted better links, links that stuck, links that didn't cost us anything, and links that actually ended up, you know, boosting us up to get much more traffic in the longer run.
That's really interesting to hear, because it's not something you hear much, you know, from the affiliate world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's but do you think that when you say, we do attract natural links, do you think part of that is because the website is broadband.co.uk and it's such a strong brand itself?
In the case of broadband.co.uk, yeah, definitely. That's a strong brand that would help. That longevity, that definitely helps. But as I said, I've built other sites, and this is where it was a case of, am I a one-trick pony? Is it just because we had a great domain name? That's why I launched other sites with just not great domain names, with with two-word domain names, nothing, you know, not hugely branded and that kind of thing. And they've attracted the same level of links and have ranked in, you know, areas as competitive, if not more competitive, than broadband. It definitely helps if you can build a brand. And that's why I say, you know, there's nothing wrong with building a brand, but every brand starts from scratch, you know. So and broadband.co.uk was, I mean, that was always a big fear we'd had for many years, was it was so specific to broadband. When the next thing came out, if they've ever called it like the next thing something different, then it was toast, you know, because you were just, your domain name didn't make sense anymore. But fortunately, all the broadband companies have carried on marketing all the different variations of broadband, well, internet access as broadband. Because like most people are on fiber optic now, which actually isn't broadband. It's a completely different technology. It is, you know, broadband was about the spectrum across copper wires and how they could get a higher frequency through. And that's, it's a broadband spectrum. That's what it stood for. Whereas fiber optic is a completely different method of data transfer. So, but they still call it and market it as broadband. So that's why they kept it value.
Yeah, that's what the audience see it as, because then you've got the whole thing about, well, is it fiber to the box or to the house and all this? But the audience don't have a clue. They just know it as broadband.
Yeah, yeah. You know? So that was fortunate, because all it would have taken was some marketer at one of the broadband providers to repackage and rename it and push it as a different name, and it could have ended it. So, but again, that was just fortunate.
Yeah. So for yourself, why have you stuck at the affiliate side of it? Is it because it's working and you're doing well at it?
Yeah. The main reason is because it scales. So as I say, I've worked in the agency side before, and we owned agencies before. And agency life could be great. And I really enjoyed working in agency when I was in my 20s. But as a business model, it's really hard to scale, because generally to produce more work, you ended up needing more people. More people is more overhead. More overhead is more risk. You lose a big client and then you lose a load of income. And then it's just like that. Whereas with the affiliate side, like it just, once the scale comes, there's nothing to sort of hold you back. If you go into e-commerce, which I did, I had an e-commerce site for a while, I was up an e-commerce business in the, was it about 2011? I can't remember now, selling model railway stuff, bizarrely. And we were selling well over £1 million worth of Hornby model railway gear every year, but we couldn't make a penny because every time we sold more, you needed more stock in. You were competing on the same product, on the same, you know, I mean, you're basically competing on price with everybody else. And it just became, you know, you needed more people, you needed more packing, even with working with 3PLs. All the costs just, as you, the bigger it grows, the more the costs grow. And the margins are really thin. Whereas with the affiliate side, the margins are great. There's a lot of margin in there. And as you scale your traffic, your costs don't rise anywhere near as much. So your costs go up a little bit, but your income goes like that. So you become much more profitable. So the scale of it, where it scales, is the thing that makes it worthwhile doing for us. So it's just more lucrative, essentially, than pretty much any other model on there. I mean, I know that people that do display ads, it's a similar thing. They're not affiliates, but obviously the more eyeballs they get on the ads on their sites, then that scales up. So it's because it's a business model that has that kind of level of scale where, you know, you don't need to scale your costs as your traffic rises is the main thing.
Wonderful. Now, is there anything we haven't spoken about yet that you really think the audience needs to hear?
I don't know. I think the only thing I would want, I always want people to try and, when I speak, I want to try and people to get across to people is that just try stuff, right? Be willing to be rubbish, right? I'm always willing to be rubbish. So everything that we ever launch, every site, rather than getting stuff polished and perfect and never launching because you'll never get it polished and perfect, just launch stuff. Just keep trying stuff. It's like my podcast. I'm just trying to try a podcast. And I don't care how good it is or isn't to start with. I just hope that over time I gradually get better at it. And, you know, don't be afraid to fail at stuff. You know, just make sure that the bets you make aren't so big that failing is going to be catastrophic for you. And I would just say to everybody, just have a go at stuff. And don't worry what other people think. I think what stops most people starting anything is the concern of what other people will think of them or the product that they've created. But just don't worry about it. Don't worry about what other people think, because you will find whatever you put out there, you will find your audience and you will find some people that like what you do. And they're the people that matter. And if you find your audience, then don't care what anyone else thinks. Don't care whether other people think, oh, that's wrong, or there's a problem there, or I would have done it differently. These people haven't done anything. So they might say how they would have done it differently, but they haven't done anything in the first place. So I just say, just get out there, try stuff, experiment, and just don't worry.
Yeah. So you mentioned your podcast. What's it called and where can people find it?
Yeah, it's called SEO Is Not That Hard, which I can credit you with the name of that, because on Twitter you asked, a question, you finish this sentence, SEO is dot dot dot, and I just responded to you, not that hard, and about a week later I was thinking, I'm going to start a podcast, I wonder what I'll call it, and I thought, yeah, SEO is not that hard, because fundamentally, compared to many other industries, many other things that people do, SEO really isn't that hard. You know, to master it is probably impossible because no one knows how it works. But the fundamentals, the things that will get you going, are not actually that hard. And that's what I want to try and get across in that podcast, that it's not that hard. And here's some things you can try. And here's some things that have worked for me and they might work for you. So, yeah, that's where it comes from. And that's why it's called that.
Wonderful. Well, the time has rocked on. And the only thing to remain is, where can people find you and what sort of conversations would you like to have?
Okay, well, they can find me on Twitter. My username is Channel5. They can also find me at keywordspeopleuse.com. And there's all contact forms on there if they want to get in touch with me. I am willing to have conversations with people about anything SEO related, anything about topical authority. I love helping people get started, because that's the best time to find out, because it's hard to re-engineer stuff later. So, but I'm willing to talk to anyone about anything. I've got nothing to sell to people other than keywordspeopleuse.com. If they want to use that, it's brilliant, but there's a freemium model on there, so you can use that for free, because I don't want to put people off using it who haven't got the resources to start with. But yeah, I'm always willing to talk SEO with anybody.
Massive, massive thank you for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Brilliant. I've loved it too. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thanks. You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.